The Orange FM.
Happy New Year, Voltron fans. It's the Let's Voltron podcast, and we're here again with you, with Jeremy Corey. And welcome to the new year, Jeremy. What do you think about 2014?
Happy New Year, Mark. I think 2014 is going to be an incredible year, of course, because it is the year of Voltron's 30th anniversary. Can you believe this?
Yes, 30 I can.
Years, 1984, September 10th. It's going to be the whole kickoff. So you're listening to, we're pretty much starting the party, aren't we?
Yes, right, we are.
This is kind of the official first stop. This is the appetizer to the whole 2014 year. So there's lots of insanely cool things already happening in the universe of Voltron. So thanks to everyone who's been subscribing on iTunes and listening on the Orange FM, and we appreciate it. And today we're just gonna dive into that Castle of Lions inbox, right? We're just
that
gonna,
mailbag.
Yes, the space mice have delivered all the snail mail to us, and Pidge has sorted the ashy text messages that come in over the frequency from Galaxy Garrison, and we're just going to dive in and get raw on some answers here and really give some insight into the behind the scenes stuff on this, the official Voltron podcast, at least for now. We're still the official Voltron podcast as we record this. They haven't let us stop using it, so
that's,
we're going
right.
to keep going.
And we have a special guest with us today, too.
We do. We have a good friend of mine, a fast friend of mine. He came to visit at the WEP office and really impressed us, just like you, Mark. You're another. In fact, I think you two are the only people who have been able to interview us in the sacred chamber there, Bob Koppler and I. So we have from Retro Blasting, Michael French, everyone. Michael in the studio audience, please welcome Michael to the program.
Thanks, I appreciate it. It's really, really exciting to be here.
Michael is does Retro Blasting, which is a really, I called it, what did I call it, like the next generation, if you remember that video game magazine that had the really premium paper.
You even compared me to Ken Burns, which
yes,
is a pretty big deal.
I like that, the Ken Burns of 80s pop culture. Michael has been very cool, and in fact, we've recruited him to help us out on the official Voltron Facebook and other social media. So he's helping us in my transition off planet Voltron on many levels. So fans, get used to him and get to liking him. And already in the short time we've been kind of trading fan posts, you've done a fantastic job. What do you think, Michael, of the universe, the state of the Voltron, and some of the stuff going on there?
Well, there's a lot of exciting stuff going on right now. It's nice to see that that's leading up into the 30th anniversary year, which we're kicking off, you know, this year, you know, that's January. But what I have noticed, too, is that, you know, much like with Retro Blasting, there are people that are really excited and then about things, and then there are people that just seem like they're never happy. So you have to find that middle ground. But the response on the Facebook page has just been awesome. I mean, when I posted those photos of the two Pidges meeting for the first time, those two action figures, people seem to really get into that. And the mini Veritex with the mini Voltron, people love that. So it's been a warm welcome. I'm really excited.
Yeah, and I forget even when we were saying, I said Michael, and he would be great for this role to help us out, and it just seemed like a logical fit, and everybody at WEP agreed, and I just kind of even I thought, my God, that's right. You have this whole toy collection that you can draw from. And so I think Facebook fans, there's never been a better time to like the official Voltron Facebook page at facebook.com/VoltronOfficial. And welcome Mike on there. He's going to be posting some very cool stuff, and including, should we launch into our Shilltron portion as if we haven't been shilling enough here?
Yeah, shill away.
Shill away. Well, of course. Mike, what happened this week? This was a pretty big pop culture collision event, I should say, last week. A certain two anime properties collided for the first time into one epic saga, as we say.
Yeah, Robotech Voltron issue number one came out on December 24th, and that is kind of a perfect marriage because, you know, Voltron hitting in 84 and then Robotech hitting in 85 at the height of Voltron's original run of popularity, both of them being animes that were adopted to the United States by small talented companies and then dubbed over into English, and they both have the while their stories are very different in the nuances, they both have this similar legacy. Those two franchises finally come together is really cool, especially with the great artwork by Tommy Yoon. And it just everything about it is just – it's like the message for me is it's about time. You know, like it's been meaning to happen, and we need to see this, and now we're seeing it. It's awesome.
Yeah, and the reviews have been pretty cool. Mark, you've been seeing some of those on Comic Hype and UnleashTheFanboy.com. And
they're all positive.
Yeah, everybody's getting a good reviews. I think, you know, if somebody jumps in and doesn't quite see initially the mashup, I think they're going to be in for a real treat. And I can tell you just from reading the scripts, it only gets better and better and really goes deeper. And Tommy Yoon, all the credit goes to him. And Elmer DeMasso, who's doing incredible. I mean, across the board, everyone says this artwork is amazing. And I think it is a really nice change up from previously. We've kind of been maybe changing it too much. So it really is a back to the root. So, and Michael, did you have a chance to peruse it at all? Did we send you a copy?
I don't have a copy yet, but I don't worry. I'm planning on running over to a local comic shop called Dr. No's here in town and picking one up. And if not, then I'll get the digital download from Comixology. But a close friend of mine who's a huge Voltron fan, Gregory Tyler, has told me that he read it and he liked it. So that's encouraging. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to reading it. I've read the sample panels. I've seen the first five pages, so I'm just waiting to dig in. But it looks like it's going to be a great run.
Very cool. Yeah, you mentioned it's now on Comixology, so fans can have it instantaneously as they're listening to this podcast. And I also want to Shilltron another kind of related Voltron project in that a lot of the talent from Voltron Force help produce a new series for DreamWorks Animation, which, as we look forward to 2014, hopefully we'll hear some new announcements from a new animated series with DreamWorks Animation and Voltron. In there's a new series on Netflix called Turbo Fast that is based on the movie that came out over the summer, Turbo, about the snail with the infused charging and speed. But I can tell you that even if you saw the movie, didn't see the movie, which I checked it out with my son, and he loved it, and the racing scenes are very exciting. But this new series, it's exclusively on Netflix. It's animated by the insane geniuses up at Titmouse, who do, you know, Venture Brothers and a lot of the Adult Swim stuff, and Chris and his Merry Man up there, and women are just really doing a good job. And it was so subversive and crazy and weird and funny. I have to say, I think it's even better than the movie. And the big Voltron Force connection there is Todd Garfield, who is the story editor on Voltron Force, is the story editor on Turbo Fast. So if you like what Todd was doing with Voltron Force as far as being, you know, very self aware with the characters and things, I encourage you to check out Turbo Fast, especially with kids. I caught my son watching more episodes today on it, and just the voice acting, everything is top notch on it, but the animation in particular, and I've been reading the reviews, everybody, I mean, it's just such a fun show that just happens to have turbocharged snails in it, but it is truly, it's funny. I was laughing out loud at a couple parts, and it's one of those, if you're stuck at home, you know, during these winter months, I encourage you to boot up old Netflix and check out Turbo Fast. And maybe, I mean, what do you guys think? Would you rather see a CGI or a 2D Voltron series moving forward here. And I'm saying this with no knowledge of what exactly that would be. I'm just curious what you guys would think.
I can tell you, I have a connection with Titmouse, actually. I had done interviews with John Schnepp, who was the director of a Kickstarter pilot that they did for Zenoscope, and that was called Grim Fairy Tales, the animated series. Mm-hmm. And I've seen their style of animation, and it's really good. And I think it'll work out perfect with the turbo fast stuff.
I like to see the past stay alive and stay modern and relevant. My only concern with CGI is that the production time right now it takes to deliver that kind of animation is lending itself more to the higher budgets and longer development times of films, whereas there's a nice hybrid that's been going on right now with some CGI elements in traditional 2D animation, which delivers better for the smaller screen, the TV screen. They just had that show Beware the Batman, and I know that it got canceled, and it was CGI 3D. I know that the majority of the problems with that show had to do with the writing, but I think also it never looks like the feature film CGI animated stuff does.
Sure.
And so part of me thinks that, like, it was the right move for Voltron Force to have, you know, the 2D animation for the characters and then save some of the cel-shaded CGI 3D for the lions. I liked, you know, the way that they balanced that until they get it to a point where they can produce CGI effectively for television, smaller television episodes. Maybe we're getting there and I just don't know it, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think the new Ninja Turtle series, as far as character animation in that CGI, which is always the tough thing, right? They talk about the uncanny valley, and particularly with Voltron, I assume you'd be dealing with human characters, so it's, you know, how cartoony do you kind of make them? But I was fairly encouraged with the new Ninja Turtle series as far as getting those expressions out in the CGI and able to make that comedy kind of come through on it, which was something we kind of struggled with on Voltron Force, as far as you just realize how hard it is to, you know, direct comedy and animate comedy in a, you know, when you're doing things overseas, especially. So, yeah, I think a new Voltron series with Titmouse at the helm would be incredible. I mean, I'm saying this just as a fan and not as anybody with any particular inside knowledge, just in the work I'm seeing them do on Turbo Fast. I think that would be kind of cool. And here's, I mean, those guys just live and breathe that stuff. I mean, you've talked to them, Mark. So anyway, right. I think that'd be cool. I guess I've already shot off the first mailbag question there, huh, with the inbox. Which would you rather see, 2D or CGI? So remains right to be seen. Yeah. So well, what do you say, guys? We just dive right in to all of our fabulous Voltron fans on Facebook and following at Voltron on Twitter. I saw that you got a lot of reactions. So let's jump in, Mark. What do you got?
Yeah, so we've had some responses from the Twitter account for both Voltron and Let's Voltron, and we've had some responses on the Facebook page and the Voltron forums and letsvoltron.com. So we'll start with a Twitter question. This comes from Sean Montgomery, and it says, were there ever plans to have Lance be romantically involved with Allura?
Shout out to Sean Montgomery there. Thank you. I've seen the name there many times. As far as if referring to Voltron Force, not really. And I'm trying to remember what Todd Garfield and I specifically, I mean, I think he was just always kind of, it wasn't really a Han Solo situation. And I know that's debated amongst Voltron fans. I mean, I believe if you go back and look at like Beast King Go Lion, it's pretty much, Princess Fala pretty much hates this guy. and mm-hmm. It's debated in the Voltron 84 series. So there were definitely no plans to kind of do the romantic thing in Voltron Force, which again is our kind of interpretation of an interpretation. So it was really just going to be more about Keith and Allura and exploring that relationship as you know, at the end of season one, he becomes, you know, King Keith essentially. So it was just going to be more kind of further explorations of that.
There was one conversation that Laura had with Lance when he was a little hot under the collar about Daniel going against his wishes. Mm-hmm. And she reminded him that, you know, he was a lot like Daniel was when he was younger and all that kind of stuff. And it still never, I never got the sense that there was anything romantic going on there. It was just that he didn't ever want to do anything to go against her.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. It's tough. And again, you're getting into minute cartoon attraction. So I would think that if maybe he took her out on the right night in Red Lion and, you know, the moon was right and that Eris wine was flowing, maybe something could go down. But I don't think it'd be a long-term relationship. I think, you know, you date Lance, but you marry Keith, right? Is that the standard line? Is that the bumper sticker I see?
So you're saying it would take a little bit of a Rouge and Ale to get something, them together?
Something. I'm just saying a little Space Mice quartet going, you know, might. And knowing Lance, I don't put that. And there'd definitely be a rift there with Keith. So there was obviously, being a children's show, there was nothing planned like that. Right. That's just my own. You got to check the box when I start talking that the views are not of Wep and of Jeremy. So that's that. There were plans definitely for Keith and Alora, but we had no plans as far as Voltron Force for Lance and Alora. And you can debate in the original series if there was any attraction beyond, you know, but him like winning a kiss over the bridge over the river Chaucera, or what was the Chaucera? I know we used that name. We brought that back, the complicated name in that one. So he was always looking for a kiss, wasn't he, in the original and mm-hmm. thing. So they were all kind of, I don't think that would even fly today. Some of the stuff on there. So there you go.
Okay.
Next question, unless Michael has any like shipping comment from the
No, I was just feeling kind of embarrassed because I'm sitting back thinking when I watched Beast King Go Lion, I felt like in a few lines, there was a few lines and exchanges very briefly with Shiragane Sven mm-hmm. and the princess that implied that it looked like there could be something burgeoning between them, but then he gets offed, so it doesn't really matter.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yep. I mean, there you go. That would have been very interesting. Maybe we could have explored that in the new second season. So there you go. Next question, Mark. What else do we have?
Okay, this is another Voltron Force question. What did the Voltron Force Lions, quote-unquote, bonding to their pilots really entail or accomplish? And this is by Cryophyte.
Cryophyte, thank you for the question. I mean, what we were trying to do there is there was always a desire to bring out the sentient side of some of these lions. And it was even debated. I can remember me saying like, man, I think they should like turn and scowl and talk and kind of, you know, we were just busy getting the show and the models done and everything that we really couldn't rig them in that way. But we always just thought that would be kind of a cool to further push the idea that this lion is mine and this has the personality traits of the pilot. So that's where that was going, is just even in the visual designs, you can see again where Lance's lion looks like a hothead lion and Keith's lion looks like a, you know, leader of the pack. So it was just a further extension of the personalities. And plus it's just something surprising and cool and kind of fun. And once you've done, you know, Roe Beast of the Week so many times, you have to kind of, you know, change some things up. So
there was that one story about Wade, how he had been rejected by mm-hmm. by the lions because they had gone back in time. You know, Coran was telling the story about their academy days, and you know, he wanted nothing more than to be a Voltron pilot. But if the lions are going to reject you, there's not much you can do.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, that was like the most debated writing session as far as. Nothing had ever been kind of opened up as far as like the previous pilots, and it's still even a little vague. I'm sure Todd Garfield, if he was on here, which we will have him on here, would say the same thing. You know, the idea that you would get the attention of the Voltron Force, and then maybe you would get to be recruited into that, and that was something. If in a season two, we would have explored as well that, you know, Coran was a pilot, and what were the previous pilots like, and how does that tie into Alphor? And you know, I guess we went into it a little bit with the cross signals episode where they discover a lot of voices from the past and things like that. But yeah, that would have been something we would have explored more. But that was tough. It was like unraveling a you know, the rubber band ball in Pee Wee Herman's out. Like, whoa, my God, how far does this go down? And where are we going? And what are we going to step on? So not nearly as controversial as Larmina being Alora's niece, which I thought was just a decision we made to make them close, and that has turned into an entire fiery debate. So I love our Voltron fans. They truly will not let anything get by us.
Well, the lions having sentience isn't really that far off from discussions they had in the original series when they tried to train the princess to fly the black lion, and they made all these comments about the fact that the black lion is harder to fly than all the others because it requires a certain kind of courage and respect, and that's even carried back over into Beast King Go Lion, where they talked about that the robot itself had sentience that was sort of buried deep within its current state, and it, you know, when they were trapped on that asteroid hurtling towards the edge of the galaxy, the goddess of the galaxy gives Go Lion back his free thought long enough to save them.
See, and I told you this guy was great, didn't I, Mark? Look at this guy.
And that may have been an effect of you know, the curse that Hagar put on Voltron when she broke apart Voltron into five pieces.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and that's a great point, Michael. And also, I shouldn't act like that concept, you know, we just thought of it, because it is in Voltron, the third dimension, as far as, you know, the lions having spirits and everything that Mark Handler was coming up with there. So I think that's just the temptation of anyone who gets to play in the Voltron sandbox is, you know, what if these lions had a lot more, you know, bring that out, that personality out in them. So, but so there you go. Thanks for the question. That's great.
There was a follow-up question by Cryophyte. There was a question about whether or not there would be Voltron pillow pets or piñatas. Any chance of seeing those?
Bring it on, right? Bring it on. Well, George Sohn, who of Toynami, does do some plush things with Hello Kitty and Street Fighter mashups and very fun stuff like that. So I would say it's great. And you know, Classic Media, now known as DreamWorks Classics, I mean, that if the pillow pet people came and said, we want to do Voltron pillow pets, I'm sure they'd be listening. So it's just, that's how the licensing business sort of works. It's not that we can just create on a whim and say, let there be pillow pets and have this happen. There has to be kind of a whole business arrangement for it. But
I want a Gary pillow.
Gary pillow would be super creepy and weird, maybe even life-size, like snuggling kind of thing, and some kind of furry Gary thing going on there, costume set. No, but I can tell you that Kevin at 80s Tees is doing some fun things that I can't reveal quite yet. But for those of you who like your quirky Voltron items, hopefully you'll have something to look forward to here in 2014. What was the other item besides pillow pets?
Piñatas.
Oh, piñatas. Well, yeah, we have a company that did a lot of party favors for Voltron 4, so I'm sure, you know, if those do well, as they would consider a piñata. But who would you hit, right? I mean, don't you want to just kind of hit the space mice or Pidge? Or would you really want to take out Voltron? Yeah, the Robeast.
With a blazing sword?
The Robeast from, like, episode 2 or whatever, with the cones and everything. And I know when I say Robeast with the Madonna cones, there's actually a
couple. What about the Predator Robeast?
Predator Robeast. Yeah, that would be interesting.
That was one of the ones that they couldn't even defeat.
All right. We had to bring him back, huh? Saves money. No, it was also trying to build one of the Robeasts up that could be really tough. Yeah, what kid wouldn't want to eat out of a snake leg and dragon and minotaur right. candy coming out of there, Hagarium candy. So so there you go. It sounds like the one that they – the piñata that some of the older Voltron Force fans would want is a Daniel piñata, just to beat it up with a stick. That's what it sounds like.
All right, let's move on to the next question.
From the forums that I'm reading, I don't know what internet you guys are on. Maybe it's a different one.
All right, we're getting into one that a lot of people have a question about. His name is Charles Garion, and he asks, what about the Voltron movie or a new cartoon? Anything?
Charles, what's up? Thanks for the question. I'll pass this over to Michael and throw him in the fire. No, I'll say, as I've said on previous podcasts, I think as far as the Voltron movie goes, look forward to some announcements here in this year. I don't have specifics, but I think you're going to be hearing about that, some new developments in that area shortly. And as far as the new cartoon, I mean, again, hearing Jeffrey Katzenberg talk about wanting to reinvent Voltron is an exciting development as far as having an animation powerhouse like that on board. So my guess is you would see some new animation before any kind of movie goes down. So yeah, I mean, that's the latest. All I can say is look forward to some new news soon, and you can bet the moment we know about it, it'll be on the official Voltron Facebook page, and Michael will probably be posting about that somehow. So yeah, it's been a long and slow development. We've went through many drafts of different scripts, but again, as we say, it's got to be right on the page before it's right on the stage. And man, we've read some super interesting and very cool drafts, but it kind of boils down to how do you differentiate it from Transformers. And you know, a lot of the debate is do you set it on Earth? Is space too unrelatable? And you know, it sucks, but movies like John Carter and the perceived performance of that do not help our cause. And as far as, you know, just space movies being sort of labeled, you know, something that is just too out there for the public. But I'm sure, you know, we can all say Star Wars, right? I'm here with two of the biggest Star Wars fans.
Yeah.
You keep throwing that out there, but it is tough. It is tough to get these people on board sometimes. And we all know what made Voltron great, you know? And it's just amazing. But at some point, and I'll tell you a little a fact that not many people know, but at some point during development, and I can't even remember exactly when, but the Polish brothers who wrote the astronauts, well, they actually wrote and directed The Astronaut Farmer with Billy Bob Thornton in it. They actually did a draft of a Voltron script, and like nobody knows about it kind of was one of those things where it's like, oh, let's check it out. And I think it was, you know, with our agents or something, they stepped up and did a draft of it, and it was really interesting. It was like kind of like the right stuff, but with you know, Voltron pilots and just a lot of the training going into it. There's your little known Voltron podcast that fact for listeners.
Kind of reminds me of the feeling I got when I read Voltron Year One, the comic book.
Right. Yes, it was very much kind of like that. But these are guys who do a lot of kind of independent movies and kind of quirkier stuff. They're famous for Twin Falls, Idaho, that came out in 1999, and that was heck, I think they were starring in it and stuff. So really interesting, smart dudes, and just it was just one of those things where it was like, oh, these like independent guys doing a draft of Voltron. So somewhere that script exists out there, and I commend them. I think it was a pretty cool, and a lot of the elements I think could make their way into it someday. But I have no idea where that draft stands as far as where it exists or if it's in some vault somewhere. But there you go. Shout out to the Polish brothers for doing a good job on a Voltron script.
All right, for the next three questions, we're going to be focusing back on Voltron Force again. Tara Scully asks, were there any future plans to bring Sven back had there been a second season of Voltron Force?
Tara, what can we say? Oh, my goodness. Hoofbeats. We know her well, don't we, Mark? Mm-hmm. She's part of the inner New York Comic Con circle, which
which
fans can be when they if they come join Voltron at New York Comic Con. We won't tell them where our secret bar is, though, will we?
It's a big party.
It is. It's like the Twitter and Facebook page come to life. So we welcome everybody. So as far as Sven goes, and I think I've told her this over a drink or two, I think given the reaction to the Ghost in the Lion episode, which fans can check out on Netflix if they're curious, I think it would be something that I definitely would have fought for. I mean, that's obviously selfish given that I had the chance to write the episode, is kind of check back in with Sven just because it queued up so many fun imaginative stories from our forum fans and everybody else in between. And I love how they've named the kid Eric, and they've really went off on, you know, the Rommel thing. So I think for sure we would have tried to bring him back at some point, and kudos to Todd Garfield for not killing him. I originally wanted it to be definitely he's dead. He left a small chance that Sven could still be out there floating on a popsicle chunk of ice somewhere you know. And plus, the actor was just so good with nailing the accent,
the Swedish
unique
accent.
Sven accent, something, right? Nordic, Swedish. Yeah, we tried to embrace the
Viking.
Kinda, yeah, we tried to embrace some of that. And someday maybe we'll go into the whole. I'm trying to remember whatever weird previous draft type stuff I had in there, and just throughout production, you know, you write this big thing that's, you know, at level 11, and by the time it gets to screen, it's always at 8 or somewhere, you know, where it just has to get things chunked down. I'm trying to remember even the crazier things. I can remember the working title was Absolute Zero, which is, you know, the freezing whatnot point, and just trying to go through, get legal all the names of because I think it was like Planet Cryos, and there's just so many things like War Planets, the old toy line from Trendmasters or something, kind of Planet Cryos. So we were very careful about what exactly, you know, was used in there. But that's a whole other thing. So yeah, Tara, we would have brought Sven back, I'm sure, for season 2. So you can't keep the original Blue Lion pilot down, even if you tried.
All right. So continuing with season 2, if there was one, Ace Irini. I'm Dragon Ace 21. He asks if there were any plans for a Vehicle Voltron, the members of the Vehicle Voltron, to appear in season 2.
Yeah, that was something I used to bug Todd about every writing session or something. How can we work Vehicle Voltron in? How can we do a shout out to Vehicle Voltron in one of these? And again, he would fire back about how we already have all these core pilots and we have these new recruits and where are we going to fit, you know, all the pilots and vehicles of Vehicle Voltron. So I think if you would have seen it, it would have been like an assembled Vehicle Voltron, like a pre-assembled one maybe, and in a way that, you know, the characters didn't, you know, you don't have to go into all of that or at least develop them. But I would say there was a strong chance that Vehicle Voltron would have ended up in some sort of cameo in there. So
I would have said it would have been good if you didn't see all 15 of them, if you maybe saw mm-hmm. either the air or the land or the sea, just one of them, and then maybe, you know, a couple of those people and just a small tease would have
yeah,
been
exactly.
Fun.
And we threw Chip into the original, or this first season, which is pretty much the only member of Vehicle Voltron you see. But yeah, we would have found a way to fit that in. I think Devil's Due did a really nice job in their comic run too, as far as making Vehicle Voltron, like, you know, I guess you could, not really the knockoff, but he was like, you know, the corporate Voltron, or at least the militarized one. So that was always kind of a unique angle. And the whole thing of season 2 was just visiting these different planets. And, you know, in the bigger picture would have been having multiple Defenders of the Universe. So I think that would have included Vehicle Voltron. So Vehicle Voltron fans, we are listening. I don't know how much I can say this is, but believe me, we want to do Vehicle Voltron stuff. What do you think of Vehicle Voltron, Michael French from Retro Blasting?
Well, I was actually sitting here thinking about the fact that, you know, Vehicle Voltron has 15 pilots, and no matter how hardcore you are a fan of Vehicle Voltron, you have to admit that. I mean, it's very difficult to figure out how to fit 15 characters into a show that's already about another group of characters, because it's not just, you know, a group of heroes. It's the Council of Elrond. Like, it's like 15 people. And it's just
that you can't even fit 15 actors into a studio right now. You can only fit, I think, at most 12.
Yeah. So, I mean, my thing is that getting Chip in there, and I remember seeing that episode where he goes to Balto and the zombie ninjas, just getting Chip in there was a really nice nod. Would I have liked to have seen the big robot, you know, Vehicle Voltron himself at some point? Sure, even if he was just being welded on in the background or something. But to see all 15 characters, I can see why that would be a tall order. I don't regret that at all.
Yeah, particularly you're trying to establish and tell the stories of these, you know, the cadets and the core group. It was just like, can't even go into that right now. But I think we would have in the second season found a way. And darn it, we almost had Albagos. That was what Awesome Tron was kind of the model of in it. So you bet I would have been fighting for that every writing session, to the annoyance of Todd Garfield.
All right, let's move on. We had Mark Oliver. He has a three-part question here. First, any chance for a Voltron Force soundtrack?
Mark Oliver. I haven't heard that name before, but he seems like he's a dedicated Voltron fan, so I'll give this rookie a shot, but someday he's going to have to prove that he truly is a Voltron fan, and maybe he wrote this question while down in that purple drink like he does. So, yes, the Voltron Force soundtrack is something that I've bugged Stefan Andrews and Hal are these fantastic composers of Voltron Force, and I've been bugging Stefan, and I will check in with him again. The thing is, they're both very, very busy up there in Canada scoring shows, so it's one of those things of just taking the time. The music has to be arranged, as you know, to be released, and because it's all in kind of queues right now, which is one of the things, and it's not exactly like a score that you can sit there and listen to. So I'll keep bugging him, and particularly the original soundtrack and everything connected to it seems to do pretty well. And I, for one, love what Hal was able to do with the score. And as far as the Five Lions themes go, if you listen to it, he's got that da-na-na-na-na, which is, you know, the five notes there. And I love it, the way he Wade's theme, and he had Lotor and everything. And I think he really made the show sound, you know, even much more epic than it was. As far as just, you know, making it bigger and bigger and bigger. And boy, that was my favorite part, just getting in, you know, the scores and the mixes, just seeing how awesome it all came together. So I loved it. Hal Beckett and Stefan Andrews, they did an incredible job, and I'll keep bugging them for it. So
will there be a Voltron 3D DVD release?
We came very close to a Voltron Third Dimension DVD release. In fact, I started working on it, and menus exist and everything. And then it was included in a deal we did with Classic Media, actually, for the home video rights to be able to make Voltron Force. So unfortunately, I wasn't able to complete it. So I don't know. We've definitely would love to do an entire DVD collector's set, and I hope that would be included. That's sort of my dream, is to see a collector's set done with every, you know, Voltron Force series and Voltron the Third Dimension and the classic series and Vehicle Voltron, maybe even Beast King Go Lion and Die Rugger in there. So I would like to see it sometime on DVD as well, as far as, you know, just the masters that exist are in HD, and it could be a really nice transfer. And, you know, the storyline, I think fans of things like Beast Wars and things like that definitely can appreciate some of the things that we were trying to do with Voltron the Third Dimension. And by we, I was, you know, just out of college, I think, by then. So or maybe in college when that came out. Michael, what did you think Voltron the Third Dimension, of the toys and just the series in general?
That was such a cool time. I mean, it was so cool. I will never forget going into a shopping mall near my house. I was in, what was that? Was that 97 or 98?
98, was it?
98, like? Yeah. And I was in, I think I was a sophomore in college, and I remember being home for, it was either like Christmas or spring break or something, and I'm in the shopping mall, and I go into KB Toys. God rest its soul. Good old
toys. I remember KB Toys.
Yeah, I go in there, and I'm looking for Star Wars stuff. And I look over and I see these bright, icy, electric blue boxes on an end cap. And I just do this double take, and I'm like, there's no way. Is that Voltron? And I go over there, and sure enough, it's all the Trendmasters Voltron with the redone Matchbox Lions, just remolded and diecast. And I'm sitting there just staring at it, stunned. And I'm thinking, you know, I admit my first thought was, my gosh, this was my favorite cartoon. I never thought I would see Voltron again. Like, I never thought I would see Voltron toys again and everything, because, you know, there were no DVDs at that time. There were hardly DVDs at all as a medium. And I was just thrilled to see that Voltron was back. So Voltron the Third Dimension for me was just like really great, because it was the indication that Voltron as a character in a franchise was not just something in my memory, something that I'd be telling my grandkids about. You know, there was this time called the 80s, and there was this Voltron rope. No, it was like, no, Voltron's here to stay. So that was cool.
Yeah, and I think I know fans have mixed feelings about the show, and certainly you have to understand that was literally the first U.S. produced computer animated series. And you know, Jason Netter, one of the producers on it, tells stories of just them like backing up hard drives and into the studio just to render that stuff, and just the sheer logistics of it going on. And in subsequent viewings, I can appreciate what Mark Handler and the writers were trying to do. And
yeah, he said it felt like a miracle that any episode was complete.
Right. Yeah, and it's just, you know, you see it and you get the original voices back and everything. And to Michael's point, here you have a resurgence of Voltron toys, which I can remember graduating from college and my first real paycheck for whatever, $100 doing some PA work on a commercial in Chicago or something. That was the first thing I did is because I'd never really had Lion Voltron all assembled, as we know how expensive it was back in the day. It was just to go buy the Trendmasters reissue, which had some slight differences, right, Michael? That had where you
right.
put the little people inside the little pilot cockpits.
There were quite a few. Trendmasters really blew out the different versions of the Voltron Lions, and they did have a die-cast Matchbox Bandai remold that had the weird fins on the green and red lions on their back end. Yeah, and they were painted slightly lighter colors, like they were still yellow, green, blue, and red, but they were almost like kind of pushing towards a pastel version. But it was still the bot. It was the 12-inch bot, and then they had the ones that you talked about with the mini pilots that went in. Then they had the mega one, the mm-hmm. really big one that had the full-size figures that went inside. It was kind of like a panache place on steroids. Like, it was this big. And then they just had all the different Voltrons. You know, I think they had one called Stealth Voltron. Yes. And I mean, you got to salute their effort. They really got behind the brand and said, you know, Voltron rocks, and we're gonna blow it out. And you know, we haven't really seen anything like that since. I mean, I got to give credit where credit's due.
They put it on the shelves, you know, which we've come close. I can tell you that. And I've been friends with a couple of the designers, as Trendmasters was a St. Louis company, and they talk about funny stories from behind the scenes, and just, you know, Dracotron, and you can see them trying to kind of expand the universe. And the time crunch that Trendmasters would turn around toys was kind of what they were known for in the industry. You know, these guys would just get a license and then just be able to turn around toys, and it seemed like a matter of months. And you hear just the hilarious stories coming out of it, whether it be, you know, putting Kiss boots, as Dracotron essentially has Kiss boots on him, and Stealth Voltron, or as I call him, Gerbiltron, as far as you know, it's like very cool ideas and things. It's just, was it executed to the fullest extent? Well, maybe not, you know. Just, I mean, this was a series they were doing in Lightwave, but it definitely has its fans, and I encourage people to check it out. And for a while it was on Netflix. I'm not sure if it is on Netflix or not. I think it still might be. They can check out Voltron the Third Dimension, or on Hulu or something somewhere as well. But the DVD, TV to DVD market is not what it used to be, but hopefully we'll see Voltron the Third Dimension included in some kind of big compilation somewhere. And I say that with no knowledge. I'm just saying that would be my wish. If you were to ever see it on DVD, it would probably be part of something bigger.
Okay. Game Demon King has the next question. For a while now, the late THQ had sold off their remaining properties and licenses to developers, while Voltron has retained the game. How close in finding a publisher, and are there plans for a Steam and Wii U versions of the video game?
Game Demon King. I can remember that Twitter handle from our Voltron Force Live tweet party. So big shout out to Game Demon King. Always asking good questions, and always been very, very cool and supportive. So I thank you. As far as the Voltron Xbox Live and Voltron PSN video game, that's a tough one. Obviously, the game itself and the code sort of belong to the developers, from what I understand. And given the vortex of THQ that all kind of, you know, unfortunately swirled in, but I give him props for, you know, making a Voltron game, you know, nearly 30 years later and having it be this modern thing. And it's a fun game to particularly play on the multiplayer levels and things to get in there with friends. I'm sure if we were all in a room right now, we could have an absolute blast with it. So it's tough to say that game in particular. I think you were going to see a new game of some sort, or a new, you know, my guess would be mobile app or something like that before you would see that game come to Steam. I mean, I don't know what the numbers are on Steam as far as, you know, if that's something that's actually profitable. For a while there, I was looking into and ways, how can we get this game back up? But for those fans who did get it while it lasted, consider it kind of a collector's item, as I know we get a lot of requests on the at Voltron Twitter to see it back. But that's a tough one to come out. So did either of you guys play the THQ game?
I don't have Xbox Live, and I don't have PlayStation or anything like that.
What are you rocking, like a Vectron, or what was the Vector?
We actually have the first version of the Wii. That's what we have.
That's still good.
Nintendo Wii.
Yeah, that's still good. That's still a good system. Yeah, my nieces and nephews will still. And plus, you can just call it your Netflix box at the end of the day. Yeah, it was tough for even Wii. I can tell you again in an official Let's Voltron, the official podcast exclusive scoop, we were really knee deep in development on a Voltron Force Wii game and 3DS game. And someday I'll have to find some of the pictures if the folks at WEP don't mind and post some of the just very initial kind of concept. I mean, I think it was even going to artwork. I know we were sharing a lot of assets, and Todd Garfield was writing the Voltron Force video game. I mean, he was writing it. He did it really clever, where it kind of filled in the episodes and stuff, so it did feel like new episodes of the series sort of in between the events. But it was going to be like this, almost a little bit like Advanced Wars, and I know that's a strange like strategy Voltron game, but it did have this like overworld map, and you would move in and you would kind of see Wade's forces, and then you would go in and have these like lion battles that were like Castle Crashers type things, you know, it was strange. It was kind of the 2.5D but had a lot of color and using the just kind of the whole palette of the series and the weapons of the lions, and it was always the question of how do you control Voltron, which was something that was tough in the Xbox Live video game. So that was fairly close to getting made in all plans. We were steaming right ahead, and then THQ started backing away from the licensed video game business as a whole, and then just sort of, you know, got out of the game in general. But that's, I think that's the first time we've really talked about that, is we were very, very close on a Voltron Force 3DS and Nintendo Wii game.
It would have been cool to see piloting of Awesome Tron or Dudley's Replica, you know, and bring that into the
maybe
mix.
That was some DLC, right? You could pay to get Dudley's. Yeah, it was really cool, and it had all the elements. I just wanted them to, you know, you to have your Wii nunchuck and then do the form blazing sword motion, you know.
Oh,
yeah,
that's cool.
You're fighting as Voltron, and there's been a couple different things, and I've just seen some initial stuff sort of run across the computer from a couple kind of indie video game developers. And I mean, you know, my wish would be to do something like the Lost Voltron 8-bit game. I think would be incredible, even if it was just like a promotional thing like Capcom did with Mega Man, where they gave away that free Street Fighter Mega Man game. That would be something on my wish list. I don't know if you agree, but so there you go. That's my Voltron Force game that almost was a story.
I remember playing a Voltron Force Flash game, though.
That's right. There is the Flash game that exists on Nicktoons.com, Voltron Force Ultimate Victory, which had at one time, you know, over 4 million plays. So that was a big hit for us as far as just a way to reach kids and let them know about the show. And you're right, Michael, in that it's a it's the closest thing we've had to a Voltron video game, and as far as Voltron Force goes, and it was really cool, and you can still play it if you look on our website at voltron.com. There's a link right to it, and it's a lot of fun. You can upgrade and even use the special code word LOTOR to unlock Voltron's Blazing Sword. So this is great. We're like the Nintendo Power folks that you used to call for help getting past, you know, Kid Icarus level. We're bringing that back. We're telling you guys some secret tips.
Okay, let's move on. We've got Casey Snyder asking, where did Wade and Voltron Force get Hegarium, and who was he working with?
Casey, excellent to hear from Casey Snyder, another fantastic. I think that's a member of Snarktron, if I'm not mistaken, in all that, but I'm pretty sure. I have trouble keeping track. Someday I need a complete roll call of that. So there you go. Reply back on Twitter with a complete Snarktron registered members in good standing who have paid dues as of this month. That's what I want to see. Casey, there was, I remember this being one of those things that Todd and I talked about later in the season. Like, wait a minute, are we ever going to explain that, where that kind of came from? And it was a deal where Wade was going to be working with LOTOR on the side as a common enemy. As you can see, that really didn't work out with them, and the kind of three-way battle that erupts you know, towards the end and whatnot, and particularly 103, the big three-way battle, but eventually all the villains do kind of become one. But that is the idea there, that there was a some backdoor Planet Doom dealings going on with Wade and figuring out, you know, and as you can see, eventually they all became kind of the same villain beast with the spider and everything. So so that was the deal there. I mean, it's just one of those things when writing a TV series, you think, okay, well, nobody's ever going to ask that question on a podcast, so we don't have to worry about it. So Casey, you got us. No. And I'm sure I'll have to pick Todd Garfield's brain to come up. He might even have a better explanation than that one. But I remember that was one that was the intention, at least, was to imply that they'd been working together.
All right. Keith and Allura are Cubby Berry from Australia.
Oh, yes, of course. One of the big KAers. So shout out to our fans down under there. Always seeing her on the Twitter.
Okay, she asks, when would we see a continuation of Brandon Thomas's Voltron universe?
That's a tough one. That's a tough one. I think Brandon did an excellent job. And honestly, I don't even know if the, you know, we'd get in his scripts and they just were so good. I mean, they just sizzled. And it was, like I said, an HBO series in script form. And then, you know, that kind of artwork to translate is super tough. So I encourage fans to check it out. In fact, 10 Lions, part two, the volume two, just came out, that kind of concludes his run a couple weeks ago. That came out, so fans can check that out in a graphic novel form. But you know, Brandon's a super talented writer. I'd hope that they could work with him in some capacity in the future. So will that specific universe be expanded upon? That's tough to say. I think with the new Robotech Voltron, it's kind of shown you the direction they're going in. So I think you'd see it in some other medium or format before that. I think he kind of wrapped up and did what he wanted to do. And you can see he has a blog and he talks about some of the experience of writing on the book. And he had even bigger plans. I mean, he kind of had to cut it short with his series. So hit him on Twitter there. He's at Miranda Mercury, another book he publishes, and he can maybe explain. I think he's done it in a blog of kind of what else he wanted to do with it. So I'm not sure you'll be seeing anytime soon, unless for some reason they resurrect that particular storyline. But I would look forward to checking out Robotech Voltron and that kind of thing before holding your breath on that exact universe again.
Okay. She also asks, is Voltron 30th anniversary book separate versus a wrap-up of the Voltron Force universe comic book by Brian Smitty Smith? And when will you interview Smitty?
We definitely want to interview Smitty for the show, and I'll send him an email right after this and see when he can pop on, because he is just a super imaginative guy and so talented. And I just talked to them, last week about the 30th book. And the plan still is that the Voltron Force sort of wrap-up comic series, comic special one shot there would be included in the actual 30th anniversary book. So whether or not that will be eventually sold separate, that's sort of up to Viz Media. But that's the plan right now, is that it's an added value, as we say in the biz, to that. So there you go.
Okay. And she also wants to know, do Keith and Allura get a happy ending?
Well, what is this? A rated R pod? What is this? suddenly got strange. Well, you'll have to see. But believe me, all the K&Aers, we've definitely heard you loud and clear. So, yeah. Do they get a happy ending? Well, that's up to Bug Bryan on his Twitter account and make sure they do. So we'll see what he comes up with.
All right. We also have from our Facebook page, Mike's friend, Gregory Tyler.
Hey, Gregory.
Shout out to Gregory. Here we go.
Now, do you know him, Mike, personally? I mean, he's a very active Voltron fan. I've always liked him. He's a normal guy. That always counts in my book. And
yeah, he's a family man. He's got a job. And his handle is Dudley Droolwright on the forum. He's one of those devoted Vehicle Voltron fans, but he loves the whole franchise. So, you know, he's one of the good guys. And he's the one doing the all custom Panache Place Vehicle Voltron. He's building it out of 3D printing, and he's drafting all the plans, and he's making it out of like foam prototypes, like foam core. And then he just told me he's having a 3D printing artist sculpt the face, because he says like he can do everything else, but he wasn't able to get the face right. So now they're doing a plan to 3D print the face.
That is incredible. That is good.
That's a true fan right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's even had 15 custom Panache Place style action figures made that will all fit in all 15 different vehicles.
No.
Wow.
Yeah.
How big are they going to be? The guy's going to, they're going to be the size of, see, I'm more excited than this than any official project, right? Like, what is this? This just sounds so above and beyond.
It'll be like the people that are following along with the life-size Millennium Falcon that's being built right now.
Yeah, I mean, Greg has already done a full mock-up in foam core, whatever he's used. It's an all-white material mock-up in 3D. It's physical. He's designed all the hatches and everything, and it stands, I think, only about an inch or two higher than the Lion Force Panache Place, the real one. So he wanted it to be in scale and kind of have that chunky monkey look that the Panache Place one did. So it's all in style, in scale, and he loves Panache Voltron.
Might have to have him on the show, Mark, just to talk about this.
One of his questions here will probably answer one of the questions about people who were asking about toys on letsvoltron.com. So let's start with this first question. How far along did Mattel get with designing a toy line for Voltron Force, and which specific items were planned, if any, and was a center swapping robot planned?
So quite far along in that you guys have been in my office and seen the models that exist, the 3D printouts, whatnot, of the very cool Lions of Voltron Force, which they were integral in helping us design. And I've held in my hand personally the Lions that you would push their backs and they would roar. So it was really cool. It had this fierce kind of lion action that I could see my 5-year-old just really going nuts for. And I had, you know, arranged the sound files and things from the show with, you know, Susan Norkin and a lot of the folks who had worked on the show. We arranged to isolate those sound effects. And it was very, very cool to see, you know, the lion. So there was just one Voltron planned as far as the black lion centered Voltron, you know, would be the kind of baseline. And then there were going to be I've held the molds of these, and I think it's safe to talk about this stuff now, is there were the kind of more entry level limited posability Lions that would have these really cool sidearms but they wouldn't be able to come together, but it'd be more just about, you know, something you could see your kid playing with in the back seat of the car, as far as, you know, just more of like a little collectible thing. And then the idea with the center ones was more, they were kind of like action figures. So there were all these just different levels. And by action figures, they were pretty big. And my favorite one was yellow center Voltron, as it had the wrecking ball maces, and you could, each one of them had, you know, some sort of action that you could push and they would do it. And he kind of spun around, you know, did that spinning wrecking maces, rock wrecking maces kind of spinning move.
I got to say, I definitely like what Hunk did with the wrecking maces,
yeah,
other than what we've seen Miley Cyrus do with a wrecking ball.
Wow, that's up to some Voltron Force fan out there to edit those two together from the episode where they're spinning around with one leg. And there you go. Wow, I'm seeing some fan art from Chitoy here somehow. Shout out to Chitoy and her new little princess. But yeah, I'm saying, wow, that she's going to do it now that I'm talking about it. There's going to be Keith and Allura like on a wrecking ball or something. Anyway, the line was going to be really nice and healthy, and retailers were very interested, and the palette was all approved. And then, like a lot of things, it just, you know, it makes you realize how hard it is to launch some of these properties. And if you make it to retail, more power to you. And then to succeed in that kind of kids universe is even more difficult, you know. And some of these things get really hot and then they go away. And you know, Mattel wasn't the only one. There were a lot of really cool toy companies. I remember Jack's Pacific really blew us away with the, they had a whole presentation and some different concepts, including like a Voltron head. It was almost like you would open it up and there'd be like a mini play set within. So and I always wanted to do like the Hulk hands type thing, where you'd be able to have your lion fists, you know. And I know we had a Voltcom as well made with Mattel that you could push, and it had the like Daniel's claws type thing would fly out of it. And it was really cool because it was kid sized. It was kind of in that, you know, role play category. So I have nothing but spectacular things to say about Mattel and everybody we work with there, from, you know, Dave Voss to Steed's son and Brandon, and all these guys were just always super cool and super fans. And they were great. They really helped us make a better show at the end of the day. And just for whatever, you know, bean counting things didn't add up on whichever side, it just, it's a shame that we aren't playing with our Voltron Force toys, as I know there's a lot of fans out there who would love it.
Do you realize there's a lot of people just drooling over everything that you've said?
Yeah, believe me.
While they're listening,
I'm one
this?
Of them. I've got my little drool cup strapped on my neck, though. That's as just kind of usual around the holidays here. So too much eggnog, but I hear you. Believe me, and they're locked in a vault somewhere. I don't know where these are or how we could ever play with these. And maybe we can bug Scott there, Scott Knightlick, to pull those out someday on the Facebook page and just display some of this stuff. So keep up the love, fans. You never know. I mean, you just never know where these things end up, and kind of, I'm not sure what it would take to get kind of a, maybe there's a possibility down the line to do a collector Voltron based on Voltron 4. So start the Twitter campaign at George at Toynami. Be like, hey, why can't he do a Voltron Force Voltron? So maybe he'd offer it as like a, I don't know what I'm talking out my, Buttron here, but like a San Diego Comic-Con thing would be pretty sweet. So, and that was, I think that was the plan too, is to launch with a San Diego Comic-Con like Gold Lion or something like that, that you couldn't get anywhere else, but that would, you know, kind of entice you to get in the store and get the rest of the Voltron Force, which I'm sure, I don't need to tell you guys, like, I don't even think you have to have a show. You could just come out with Voltron toys and put them on there. To me, it's, again,
right,
like Slinky. It's one of the fascinating things. So, yeah, and particularly just the designs were so cool that it is one of these tough things. But, you know, let's keep talking about it, and you never know. These things can happen, right? Hey, Michael, is that that seems to be a new trend, right, is taking like toys and making them look like super 70s retro. Like, I remember at Comic-Con they had the Alien figures.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking when you were saying you know, maybe one day we'll have Voltron Force toys. And the first thing I thought of was, right, 30 years from now, Funko will get them just like they got the Kenner Alien figures, and they'll bring them out and say, you know, years ago, Mattel had Voltron Force toys planned, and they never made them, but we've made them now, exactly like they were designed.
Now, Michael, is that true that really Kenner, those are the – that isn't just some cool – publicity, that really is Kenner.
Because Kenner made that alien doll. It was like 12 inches tall, and then they were going to follow it up with the action figure line, the 3¾-inch action figures, because they had done so well with Star Wars. And so they're like, hey, it's another space movie. This is going to be great. And then someone figured out that little kids don't want to buy a huge, scary alien doll. And they were like, maybe this was a miscalculation on our part. And so they didn't make the rest of the series. So all you had was that weird 12-inch alien doll. And he's now worth a mint on the collector's market. So,
wow, that's amazing. All right, that's another whole other toy podcast that we could go into.
But, you know, Voltron has that in its history too. You know, the lost Panache Place figures, you know.
Oh, that's such a great point. Yeah, that pretty much is that. That's the next project somebody needs to pick up, you know, right?
Get Funko to get the Panache Place molds for the second wave of characters. And, you know, I believe there were some vehicle Voltron pilots in that run. And there was Sven in his Dr. No outfit was in that run. And that would have been great.
That's a great idea. See, Michael is incredible. There you go. Put that on the list, Michael. Okay. To do. Get Funko to release second wave of Voltron Panache Place. I love it.
Okay. Yeah, I'd buy them.
I mean, right?
I would. I'd be the first one in line. Well,
they're somewhere. Greg Tyler. Right. They're somewhere out there.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we've only got a couple more questions here to go, and then we're done.
You act like this is a chore or something. I'm having a great time. I don't know about you guys. I'm on my second martini here. This is how I like to spend the holiday, chilling in Houston, Texas, with the family here. And
isn't it supposed to be champagne for New Year's?
No, that's stuff that gives me gas. It's very bubbly and weird. And yeah, I've never dug the champagne. What about you guys?
Yeah, I'm pretty much into the champagne and sparkling wines.
Really?
Yeah, not me. It gives Melinda migraine, and I've never had a taste for it, so I just kind of go along with that. So
we need to isolate that clip of Mark saying he's into champagne and sparkling wine. That needs to be your new Skype handle. I'm into champagne and sparkling wines, and I will chop down a tree with my bare hands.
And with my blazing sword, of course. All right, so... people on letsvoltron.com have been asking, we need coloring books of new Voltron Force. Several of us who are now parents have kids ages 6 to 10, and it's school holidays. They need printable Voltron Force coloring pages.
That's a brilliant idea. I saw that just in you kind of sent over some of the questions. And, Michael, I could maybe use your help on that. What we can maybe do, and I'll have to look back in our style guide and see if there's a way to sort of take the color away, which I kind of think there is. And maybe, you know, if everybody's cool with it, we could offer pictures on the Voltron Facebook page or on Voltron.com as a downloadable thing. And so you can essentially make your own coloring book. So add that to the to-do list again. I think there's a way to kind of make that happen, because I discovered that, you know, like a lot of fans, you know, I remember having the, you know, the Voltron coloring books and just loving it. And it was the first time I kind of understood anime. And I remember Lotor's eye, you know, just having that like fang appearance to it. And I then come to work for WEP and see that, wait a minute, these coloring books were just, you know, the style guide. They just put it out there practically. And it was, you were basically had the entire style guide if you have that coloring book and more. I mean, I think there was some of, you know, somebody had to draw some more things, but you can tell it's like not quite on guide, on style there, on brand, as we would say. So I think that's actually something we might be able to do about. So, I don't know if it would be worth printing up an official Voltron Force coloring book, but definitely some kind of
the easiest thing I think the easiest thing to do would be to post it online and have people print it out themselves.
I love that idea, particularly for our young Voltron Force fans that, you know, every once in a while I'll be at some whatever Super Bowl party and they'll be like, oh, my son loves Voltron. I'll be like, oh yeah, it's the classics. No, the new series. So it's that's always warms my heart. So let's see what Michael and I can do together here to make that happen.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
That'd be fun.
And last but not least, from the Voltron forums, we have you considered a video component to the podcast like Collection DX has?
I think there'd be something down the line we'd love to do. Granted, we're all busy and it's kind of tough to get everybody with pants on, much less, you know, in the same room. And not that we would need to be the same room, but I don't know what visually striking things we could hold up. I know Collection DX, you know, they're holding up toys and showing kind of things, which I guess we could do too with the new Toynami toys as well. So let's see if the fans want us to do it. We certainly would do some kind of video thing. I always wanted to do some kind of like Voltron TV and really change our YouTube page to, you know, highlight different robot series and sort of, you know, the dream would be to sell, you know, a robot of the month club. And if you're a fan of Voltron, well, you know, you ever heard of Voltus V and things like that? Just kind of explore. So many people know Voltron, but they don't know some of the other mecha and things coming out of Japan and sort of similar genre stuff. So that was one of the things. So maybe we could expand this and Voltron podcast could just be sort of giant robot fans in general. I know George Sloan would be down with that.
Well, here's the thing. If we were to actually attend any of these conventions and have a little booth together where we could have our Voltron podcast there, we could obviously do a video podcast. And then, you know, we could have it available on audio and on video. And we could post it on YouTube. And there are places out there, and I know I had spoken to you about this before, and Mike would also be interested in this thing, being that he's from Retro Blasting. There's a convention in Greater Philadelphia Expo Center every September called RetroCon. And part of their logo, the T part of RetroCon, is a Blazing Sword T, just like the one from the Voltron logo. And they're big fans of Voltron there.
Yeah, it's something, and certainly, yeah, Michael French is the man to know about video podcasting. I mean, he's the guy who's going to do it. Yeah, that's something. Let's see how this grows. I mean, fans just need to keep subscribing and giving feedback and asking great questions like today, and we'll take this thing to the next level.
Well, I'm hoping that Josh from Collection DX, he recently expressed interest in talking to me and having me on his Collection DX show. It hasn't happened yet because obviously there's been the holidays and stuff like that. But and it was regarding stuff that we're doing on Retroblasting. But I'll be happy to ask him when I get in touch with him about, you know, how he manages that video side of the podcast, because it can be, you know, rather challenging. I've watched some of his podcasts before, and you know how you time the switches and do all that kind of stuff, and what you show and how you schedule it. I mean, he's got it down to a science.
Yeah. He tells it how it is too. It's kind of the no spin zone there. So right. Yeah, I don't think he was the one with the Matty Collector Voltron, right? The hotly debated Matty Collector Voltron. I think I can remember him blasting us in Voltron's Blazing Sword, you know, knocking that around. So we'll see. So
not as bad. I'd like to go on record as saying I didn't blast Wep, I blasted Mattel.
Fair. And you can check out all kinds of Retro Blasting reviews of the Matty Collector Voltron and all kinds of stuff. In fact, your wife Melinda does a really cool section on Go Lion in itself, right?
Yeah, she did a really awesome review of the original Toynami masterpiece, which, you know, that's what's so cool about Toynami coming back and doing the new 30th anniversary edition, because we're finally getting the Toynami diecast design again, which, you know, she loves that design. She's lined up to get the newest one. And she loves Go Lion. She I think fell in love with it more instantly than I did when we put in Go Lion. After I said, oh, you know, I love this thing called Voltron, and I just got the original Japanese. Let's put it in. And as a Voltron fan, I'm trying to get used to the song and everything like that. I'm like, this is a little weird. But Melinda was just all into it. She was like, this rocks. This is so cool. And so, yeah, she loves metal bots. She even has to bring the whole thing full circle. You know, we started talking about Robotech Voltron. We can kind of end it on this for me. At the top of our display case in our living room, she owns the top shelf, and right under the puck lights. And on the left side is her coveted all die-cast masterpiece Voltron with his blazing sword. And then under the right puck light is the Yamato Macross Valkyrie, the Veritech Robotech fighter in 1/48 scale. And they're both sitting there, and it's been that way for like 2 years. And now you guys are doing the Robotech Voltron comic, and I look up at that shelf and I'm like, wow, that's just weird. Like, they're both standing there together, and now they're both in a comic together.
I think it's time tomorrow here, 2014, you venture, yeah, grab your local shop that you mentioned and pick up a copy. And or if not, we'll have to send you one of the ones we do for Tom that Tommy Yoon signed, and you guys could read it together as I would say by the fire, kind of like a Night Before Christmas thing. But that's past. But you're absolutely right, Michael. There's no way better way to end the podcast and talk about that. And that's Robotech Voltron out now on Comixology and in your local comic shop.
And we want to thank all the fans for submitting these questions. These were great questions. And Jeremy's, your tongue is probably a little tired at this point. That was a lot of questions that you answered there.
Well, we got into some things that we hadn't talked about ever before. So I hope fans that are listening to this podcast find it rewarding that we go in a little bit deeper. You know, this is the Playboy interview, as Quentin Tarantino would say. You know, that's where you really talk about the stuff that goes on. This isn't, you know, the Good Morning America stuff. And Michael is just incredible. I would listen to a podcast with both of you guys on there just talking Star Wars or everything. You've been such a great guest, and I hope you come become a more permanent fixture of the show here as we move forward.
If you'll have me, I'll be here.
There you go. There you go.
All right. So we're going to say Happy New Year one more time, and we're looking forward to an exciting 2014 for Voltron. And as we come to a close here, we want to say Happy New Year, Voltron fans all around the world. And can we get all three of us to say Let's Voltron at the same time?
Of course, on your command.
All right, let's do it. 1, 2, 3. Let's Voltron.
Let's Voltron.
We got to work on that for the next show.
Yeah, we got to work on that. All right,
everybody.
So long, folks.